Back, Mighty Vandals, to Tubbs of the Club, your University of Idaho affiliate on the Big Sky Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brian Marceau, joined as always by a guy who produces. He sometimes does something that's like producing that I'm not allowed to say anymore. Martin, how's it going in Moscow?
It's going good. It's finally turning into colder weather in Moscow after a somewhat normal homecoming weekend. I can't complain.
That was not a normal homecoming. We'll get to that. This was not a normal homecoming weekend, Friday. What are you
weather
talking about?
Wise.
So, okay. But hey, we have a special co-host, guys. First time joining Tubbs the Club, former All Big Sky receiver out of the University of Montana, Samuel Akem. Also, I have to do an ad read impromptu for Samuel Akem at Samuel Akem on YouTube, guys. Yes, I almost killed myself driving home from work today trying to watch the clip he posted on Twitter of some of his breakdown of the Idaho-Montana football game. They're honestly, dudes, like, hey, Taylor Cash listener, you're going to love what Samuel Akem does. Colin Hughes, you're going to love Samuel Kem's videos. Please watch them. But hey, you've been on the shelf for a while. Samuel, how's it going, dude?
It's good, man. I'm happy to be here. Happy to discuss the Idaho Vandals versus Montana game. It's going to be fun, man.
Yeah. We're stoked to have you here, too. By the way, Tubbs the Club brought to us by Snake River Stampede Canadian Whiskey. So, honestly, one of the reasons I'm stoked to have you on here, Samuel, is you have background playing in the FCS playoffs. And look, before we hit the game, just so we have like the subtext cleared, and I don't feel like we have to enunciate this all the time. Obviously, Idaho's not a terrible team. Obviously, Idaho's a pretty good team. So when we talk about what went well, what went wrong for Idaho, we're mostly concerned with, hey, Idaho was number three heading into the 23-21 loss to Montana. To me, I'm a little more concerned with trying to contextualize what we saw against Montana and how that means for a team that has playoff aspirations, that at 5-2, it would be a huge faceplant at this point for Idaho to not make the playoffs. So yeah. with that understood, hey, quick run through the game in case you missed it. Idaho's hosting Montana, homecoming. It's the first sellout in the Kibbe Dome since God knows when. I didn't look up the stats, but I know it's been a while. Actually, before I go to the breakdown, hey, Samuel, the Kibbe Dome looks a little bit different than the last time you were in there, correct?
It did. A little more packed out.
Yeah, which not a bad thing. But look, Montana, this was a huge win for Montana. For Idaho, Idaho came out flat. Montana did not. Idaho's down 20-0 with 2 minutes left in the second quarter. Grizz hit a couple field goals. Grant Glasgow, a 44-yarder first score, a 46-yarder the last score of the first half. Sandwiched in between those two field goals, Montana gets a 76-yard touchdown pass from Clifton McDowell, the junior Bergen. Then separate drive, Clifton McDowell finishes a 93-yard drive with an 8-yard touchdown run. So Montana's up 20-0. Idaho gets an 11-yard touchdown by Anthony Woods to end the second half. Then we'll have to talk about this. Idaho, first drive of the third quarter, advances pretty deep, ends up going for it on fourth down instead of kicking a field goal. Doesn't work out. Montana then gets up 23-7 at the 11-minute mark left in the fourth quarter. Idaho mounts a damn furious comeback, being down 23-7 with 11 minutes left in the fourth. Hayden Hatton catches a 19-yard touchdown pass from Giovanni McCoy with 5 minutes, 48 seconds left. Hatton also catches a 2-point conversion. Hayden Hatton then, after Montana drive stalls out, Hatton catches a 23-yard touchdown pass from Giovanni McCoy with 1:47 left. Idaho has an onside kick, which they recover, but Hayden Hatton, as my understanding by the letter of the law, correctly was offside. So, hey, Idaho loses that offside. Montana goes three, and well, actually, they were stalled on a fourth and one conversion. Idaho gets the ball back. Giovanni McCoy fumbles on, it's not a sack, but he's getting tackled, fumbles, game over. So, with that kind of abbreviated, truncated walk through the game, guys, watch it on ESPN Plus if you haven't. Samuel, what went well for Idaho?
Man, first off, the scramble. I mean, Giovanni McCoy outside of the pocket was killer for you guys. I mean, his ability to extend plays and find guys downfield was, I think that was the best part of you guys' offense, personally. Let me think. defensively, what really went well for you guys?
Let's pause and hit the offensive part too, because I think I want to stay there talking about McCoy, but I also think it was clearly two halves, or honestly, it was two and a half quarters and then three and then 1.5 quarter for Idaho. First half, what went well for Idaho offensively? Not a lot. Both Idaho and Montana are going to feel like they left some points on the board in both halves.
Most definitely.
For sure. So the Idaho end of that is in the first half, I felt that Idaho, they had some self-inflicted gunshot wounds, man. There was the first drive, Javonte McCoy fumbles a third down snap.
35.
Yeah, yep. 35, fumbles a snap. Separate drive later on a third and 15, Jermaine Jackson, first team All-Big Sky receiver in 2022, has a pass bounce off his face mask. If he caught that, he's going to be down at 4th-and-1, but it's potentially field goal position, or as we saw, Jason X probably going for it on 4th-and-1. But hey, that potentially changes what's going on. Jordan Dwyer dropped a pretty big screen pass as well in the first half that he looked like he had space to extend that for first down. But what went well for Idaho in the first half offensively to me was virtually nothing other than the final drive.
And tempo.
And hey, thank you. You hit that. That's it. I'm going to throw it to you in a second to talk tempo, because that everyone who watches the show knows that Idaho's offensively, Idaho prefers to run a little bit more than they pass. They prefer to sit on every single play clock, run it down until under 5, and essentially ice the other team's offense and make the other team have to be very efficient offensively if they're going to keep up. Yeah, that didn't work for Idaho in the first half. The Grizz came with incredible intensity. Intensity we hadn't really – I mean, to me, hey, tell me if I'm wrong. I thought that was the best intensity we'd seen out of Montana this season.
Bar none. Like, I hadn't seen that yet. I hadn't seen it at all yet this season.
Yeah, the Montana team we saw, it's honestly inconceivable to think they lost to NAU 28-14.
Right?
Yeah. Both execution and then, again, just energy. It looked like – one of the things I've always been impressed with about Bobby Houck teams is, look, say what you want about conservative offense, whatever. But there's no world where Bobby Houck isn't a good coach. And one of the things that is impressive to me about Montana and Bobby Houck is he gets people to play damn hard for a long time. And that's part of what was flooring about the NAU thing. But hey, fast forward to the game we care about, Idaho. Montana, they looked like the Montana that I expect to see. But then, hey, going tempo, I guess I want to ask you what you saw differently in this game that went well for Idaho tempo wise, because you're right. Idaho, when they went tempo, which is not what they like to do, that's when Idaho accrued essentially all of their points.
Yeah. I think with the tempo, I think it just affects Montana's defense so much because you're not able to get in some of those blitz packages where guys are moving around. I feel like they're not really able to pressure as they would like to, so they really just get in a base coverage. And if you were looking at the base coverage, at least in this game, a lot of the times that they were doing that, at least in the first half, right before halftime, when Idaho started to do the tempo, Montana was just jumping in a basic Tampa coverage, bringing four, not really. And if you know where the holes in Tampa 2 are, you're able to carve that up very easily. And I saw Giovanni doing that very easily. You know, I think we were still getting a little pressure because he was getting out of the pocket, but nothing to the extent of bringing 5, bringing 6, maybe bringing a max blitz or a zero blitz, you know, none of that. I don't think we were able to dial any of that up just because of the tempo of the offense. So I think in terms of how it affected Montana and why it was so effective is because of the fact that, you know, we're not able to get in some of our defensive sets. We were not able to.
Which now, hey, question for you as well, relating to this, because you played for Bobby Houck, a guy who is famously, I'm going to say, stubborn, and I'm going to assume you know what I'm talking about. Most people know about that, but Bobby Houck has his ways, and his ways are his ways. Every coach has their version of that. Jason Eck has been open since day one press conference. He wants to adapt his game plan to both the talent and what the situation demand, but it's also clear if you listen to the post game, Jason Eck wasn't exactly stoked about the pass to rush ratio in this game, which Usually Idaho tries to run around 1.5-ish times for every pass. Yeah, well, this game, Javonte McCoy, 37 pass attempts. You count the six sacks. That's 43 pass attempts. And running back called rushes, 16. So about 43 to 16, that's not an Idaho split. Now, that's part of the tempo. But I guess question I have for you is, like, you saw Eck do a version of he did the tempo for some of the game, but also for those final two drives. I mean, I didn't feel like Idaho was exactly sprinting to the line. So I guess how do you interpret, you know, what you saw out of Idaho, especially those last two drives of like, yes, the team did go tempo, but that's obviously not something Jason Eck wants to do that much.
How do I interpret why they did that, or what are you trying to say?
Both, like, why, like, I mean, the why you explained is what Idaho was doing didn't work early, but I guess how should Idaho fans interpret the fact that tempo kicked ass against Montana, but even in the post game, Jason Eck sounded like he didn't that's not something he really wants to do that much.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, do you understand that it's like, hey, coach making the right call? Or when you see Idaho go tempo, like, do you think, okay, this looks like a pretty damn good offense going tempo? Like, what's the reservation in the first place?
I think it goes back to what you said, just about the stubbornness of coaches and how, you know, if something's working, obviously they'll dibble and dabble in it for a minute. But just like you said with Coach Houck, at the end of the day, coaches are stubborn and, you know, they want to hang their hat on what they do well, you know. So if we want to be a running team, or, well, that doesn't even make sense because you guys threw the ball 37, what'd you say, 40?
Four, if you count the sacks. Sometimes. Yeah, if you count the sack attempt, the sacks, 43 dropbacks to pass.
I don't know why they wouldn't go to tempo. Well, actually, maybe, yes, I do actually, because of what I was saying. That's what I was getting at. Maybe you guys didn't go back to the tempo because he really wanted to get back to being a running team. But Montana, it felt like every drive we got maybe a sack, a drive, and that would put you guys behind the sticks. So when you get behind the sticks, you didn't have to throw the ball. So I think the repercussions of us getting so much pressure on Javonte and getting what we have six sacks on him, that caused him to not be able to run the game plan he wanted because, you know, Anthony Woods only had 41 rushing yards on 12 attempts, which isn't terrible, but it's like you probably would like to get him more attempts. The reason he probably didn't get those attempts is because you guys were always behind in the chains. That's the number one thing for running teams. You got to stay ahead in the chains. And if you're always fighting a second and 11, a second and 12, second and 8, like, you can't run the ball in those type of situations. So I think in terms of why he didn't go, or why he stayed, or why he didn't go to the tempo, is because he truly wanted to run his game plan, but he just wasn't able to.
Okay. And the question I'm going to ask you offensively too is, I don't know how much Idaho football you've watched this year, but in just general terms, Idaho's been a much more effective run blocking team than pass blocking. Pass blocking has looked like a relative weakness for a while. And with center Elijah Sanchez out, Elijah Sanchez is out for the year. So
that's tough.
Idaho's going to have to roll with some true freshmen on the offensive line. If Idaho make whatever playoff that run Idaho makes, they're going to have some true freshman contributors on the offensive line. There's no way around that.
Yeah.
What did you see? Montana was obviously effective in blowing up Idaho's offensive line, which, again, astounding if you think heading into this game, Montana had zero big sky sacks. That just sounds preposterous.
Well, technically, we had one against Idaho State, but yeah, you're correct.
My bad, dude. I was one off. Okay, my bad. I was one off. So in three big sky games heading in, Montana has one total sack.
Yeah,
they pick up six against Idaho. Look, if Idaho has any quarterback other than Javonte McCoy, it could have been 12.
Man, there was a few that he slipped out of where I was like, how do we not get him down right there? But yes.
So from just talking about the offensive line for a moment, you've played on teams that made it to the quarterfinals of the FCS playoffs. Idaho's offensive line, from what you saw broadly, what's your takeaway in particular pass protection?
I think you guys, well, I don't, I guess we'll see the repercussions of, or the effects of not having your center long-term as we go through the season, but I think you guys can still make it, you know, I think you guys can still make a deep run in the playoffs. You know, quarterback play to me is one of the biggest factors in success in the FCS. Quarterback play and defense is one of my, what I think leads to a lot of success, and O-line play would probably be up there as well, but you guys don't have that, you know? So, I think you guys have the ability to make a deep playoff run because, you know, you're not going to see a Montana every game, but obviously you guys still got to see Montana State, which that's going to be a juggernaut. We don't have to talk about that right now, but in terms of your ability to make a deep playoff run, I think you guys can. I think you guys can weather the storm, and I think you guys can find ways to work around the questionable offensive line pass blocking aspect of it.
Okay, so your takeaway, if you're talking to me at the end of that game, of the Idaho-Montana game, on my drive home to Coeur d'Alene, mm-hmm. what you're telling me is, Brian, take a Xanax. Everyone knew Idaho wasn't winning the national championship this year, but the team's still good. Montana's just a lot better than we thought they were based off what we saw.
I don't want to say you guys can't win the national championship because, you know, anything can happen. But, yes, I would tell you to take a chill pill because, you know, as much as I would like, that we just beat you guys down and know there was no chance, you guys lost by two. And you guys were a two-point conversion from making that game go to overtime and potentially win. So it's like, yeah, I'm a Grizz guy at heart and at the end of the day, but I would never tell you that. I wouldn't tell you after that performance that there you should be stressing out. There's definitely some things to stress about. The offensive pass protection is something that needs to be fixed. The slow start is something that needs to be fixed. But also, I think that has to do with jitters. And I kind of talked about this in my breakdown video about how I just think that, you know, I don't think you guys are used to being the team that's hunted. You know, that's us. You know, I don't think you guys are used to being the favorite. I don't think you guys are used to having the Kibby Dome packed like that. And I feel like it showed, like Javonte dropping that snap on the 3rd and 5, the number 6 receiver was named Dwyer, him dropping that that screen pass. And then guys just dropping wide open passes, the false starts. I think it was just a little bit of jitters early and you guys got off to a rough start. Montana got off to a good start and that carried us through the second half of the game. But on the other end of that, I would tell you that, you know, Montana didn't have the best second half offensively. We literally couldn't get anything going. I think part of that is because of your offensive philosophy. You guys did control a lot of the ball and the clock in the second half, which led to us not being able to get a lot of things going. So, no, I don't think you need to stress, man. I think you guys are going to be fine.
Okay. And, hey, dude, you hit the point I'm gonna go to in a second because we have defensive questions, too. Before we get there, Martin, show sponsor Snake River Stampede Canadian Whiskey. One of the best, the best buys in Idaho State Liquor Store, in my mind. You're talking about quality per dollar. So if you there's two options. You can get the Snake River Stampede. It's double barrel finished, first fill bourbon, then Oloroso sherry casks. That's $25.95 a fifth. Or if you're like me and you buy it exclusively by the handle, $45.95. If you're celebrating a bigger win, which I did not pour any of the Snake River Stampede 1915 small batch on Saturday. That's aged an extra 2 years. Its double barrel finish is first fill bourbon and then ex-Canadian rye whiskey casks. Either one, you can't go wrong. So if you haven't given Snake River a try, I don't know what in God's name is wrong with you. Give him a shot. So, okay, Sammy, hey, producer Martin, I'm hearing some pretty aggressive static. Are you hearing that as well? Okay, I'm going to take that as a no. That's a me problem. So, okay, Sammy, for Idaho and Montana, there was some symmetry in the halves, and that Montana was real strong offensively in the first half, not so much in the second half. Idaho was the inverse. So, first half, when Montana's looking good, what is Montana exploiting out of Idaho?
Man, we were just exploiting matchups. Like on the first 75-yard touchdown, Junior had a linebacker. I don't know. Is 31 a linebacker or is he a safety?
31 Matthias Bertram. He's a linebacker. He was a strong safety the year before, so he's a converted linebacker.
Right. That's bad business for you guys, especially on Junior Bergen. Like I would never do that. And we exploited that. And then Let me think about the second touchdown. Really, the second touchdown drive we had, that drive really got started by a big run by Eli. But if you look at the some of the blocks on that drive, Montana was mauling your linebackers and corners all the way down the field that drive, and there were some really big blocks. That's actually the second touchdown drive, the second touchdown that we scored. That drive is the drive where we got the unnecessary roughness block out of bounds. You know, so I think that was a drive for Montana where they really just set the tone, set the physicality tone for that half, and were really imposing their will on Idaho's defense during that drive.
Is it safe to say that penalty, which, hey, there was two penalties called. I have no idea what the penalty on the Idaho side was called because it was no player was referenced. It felt like the ref saying, we'll call penalties, but nothing changes. But anyway, is it safe to say, let's pretend the Idaho penalty doesn't get called? Is Bobby Hauck going to be pissed about that single penalty based off what we saw out of 61? It was the lineman.
Yes. Is he going to be mad about that penalty?
Yeah. If there's no offsetting one from Idaho.
I think you're a little bit upset about it because it was a bit egregious. Yeah, I'll say yeah. I think he is a bit mad about that because it is a bit egregious. You know, you want them to block them and you want to show aggression, but I think he might have been mad. But I think the fact that there was an Idaho penalty called as well, that kind of mitigated that. So yeah, that's what I would say about that. I think he might, I don't know so much, you know, because I feel like a lot of those situations with how are interchangeable. You know, sometimes he's like, man, he deserves, like, I don't know. I feel like sometimes he's like, you know, he'll back his guys, and then sometimes it's like, you know, that's a bit too much. I feel like it's a fine line between too much and enough. Personally, and I said this in my breakdown, I did like the penalty by McGinnis because I felt like that was sending a message to Idaho. The one thing I did not like about that play was the fact that there was a fan who really just got bulldozed over, and I hope they're okay. But in terms of the mentality, in terms of the aggression of the play, I loved it. You know, I feel like it sends a message to Idaho and lets them know that we're not going anywhere.
Okay. And hey, I'm going to hit a couple stats really quick. Sammy, there was some static coming in that I'm pretty sure came on your end. So I don't know if there's anything you can do to check in on that. Forgive me. We're producing in public.
But is it still static?
It just got better. It's been kind of coming in and out. All right. You are golden. You're golden right now. But all right. Look, overall, Idaho, what they surrender less than 50 yards in the second half. Now, part of that is Bobby Hauck is famously conservative in the second half. Part of that is, like you already hit, Idaho dominated time of possession second half. So when you're not getting to call any plays, it's hard to accrue any sort of yards. But if we're just narrowly looking at Idaho taking care of its business in the second half defensively, what did you see differently out of Idaho in the second half than what we saw in the first half?
I saw a significant amount more of man coverage. I feel like you guys ran a bit more of man coverage, but also I think it can't be understated the fact that we just didn't get to start a rhythm. And then there's times, you know, where we could have hit a deep shot over the top, or we could have hit, there was two times where we could have hit a deep shot over top. And there was one time in the red zone where we ended up getting our field goal that made it 23-7 maybe, or I can't remember what the score was, but it was when we made our score 23. It was a 3rd and 11 and we dropped it. You know, well, 22 had made a really good play on it, but in my opinion, I think we should make that play. But I think it's just like we're not able to get in a rhythm because the ball control, you know. So just like you talked about earlier, like you're kind of freezing us out. You know, we can't get in a rhythm in the first half. You know, we got a couple first downs and we were able to get in a rhythm, but in the second half, we weren't able to do that. So I think that greatly affected us offensively in the second half. And I think your defense played some more man coverage as well. But I don't know so much if I would say it's what your defense did rather than I would say it's what your offense did to help out your defense.
Okay. Which in the discussion we had earlier about tempo, now that would also help. That would also fall in the camp of like, hey, well, this is part of why Jason Eck was hoping to milk the clock. And yeah, I got to hit one thing from the press conference that Jason Eck talked about to contextualize this. Cause look, Idaho fans love that Jason Eck's aggressive. And that's, he's been like that since day one, being aggressive offensively. He goes for it on fourth quite a bit. He calls a, there's always at least one trick play per game. And overall, I love that about him. There are very few things about Jason Eck I'm ever going to complain about, because him coming to Idaho, it's been night and day.
Made y'all relevant again.
Absolutely. I mean, selling out the Dome is something that I think the Big Sky for a while had been waiting for Idaho to do. Because one, hey, big picture, 16,000's not that many people. But still, within a Dome, it can be a kick-ass environment with 16,000. Yeah. So, hey, I cleared my throat for half an hour to say, Jason Eck not taking the points on that first drive of the third quarter. I know that, look, that's one that I was second-guessing. Jason Eck talked about in postgame. And his rationale was, based off what Idaho's defense had done the first half, he thought if Idaho's going to win, and Eck plays to win, they're going to need to score around 30-ish points. And if they can't get over 30, there's no way they're going to win. So that was his math in going for it on fourth down that time. He also brought up, hey, like, had he known things were going to change the way they did, obviously he should have gone for the kick.
Yeah.
But at the time of the decision, he didn't know that. So, hey, in the comment section, got Mike Colton saying, take the points. Like, I'm with you. In the moment, I really wished he would have taken those three, because a 10-point game is not that terrible, especially considering they'd been down by 20. We've talked now, Samuel, about Jason Eck's math. Tell me what your math was watching that game as a Grizz fan. Idaho doesn't take the points.
Man, I wasn't even thinking about the fact that you guys didn't take the points, because I was so worried about our offense not getting anything going. That's what my mind was on. I was like, man, like, these guys are controlling the ball. Every time we get the ball, we're not hitting our deep shots. We're not hitting our opportunities. Personally, I'm not mad at the decision. Because if that's who he's been, just like we've said multiple times during this, like, be who you are, you know? Just like he, you know, everybody thought the tempo worked, but then he started going ball control in the second half, and it really did work. So, you know, be who you are. Be aggressive. Be a ball control coach. You know, I wouldn't tell him to stray away from that at all, you know?
And now the other call that I'm going to say in the moment, that's second – 2-point conversion.
Oh, yeah.
Putting the ball in Hayden Hatton's hands. Now, hey, Jason Eck talked about this in the presser too. He said, hey, run pass option. He thought it'd be effective, in A, because of the misdirection, B, because it puts the defense in a position where if Hayden looks like he's going to hold on to the ball, defense has to start pressing up, which potentially helps open up space for a very short throw. Keep in mind, the snap is at the 2-yard line. So he had Hatton not slipped. He did have a little space to move. Again, now from your Grizz fan end, dude, how'd you react to that call on 2-point conversion?
I was stressing about that, not gonna lie, because I do know, like, that's how it always works. It's like the guy has a run pass option, no matter who it is, a quarterback, a running back, a receiver. This time it was a receiver. You know, the defense always comes up with, because it's only 2 yards, so it. I like the thinking behind it, because you do only have 2 yards. So the defense, you can't hesitate. You have to react. So if you think he's going to run, you have to react. So I'm honestly not mad at the decision personally. I mean, I'm not mad at the play and the thought behind the play. Personally, I would have kept the ball in my best player's hands, whether you think that's Hayden Hatton, maybe so. I believe you guys' best player is Javonte McCoy. I would have kept the ball in his hands. He's been making plays happen outside of the pocket all game long. Why would we stray away from that? But I'm not mad at the thinking that, you know, I'm not mad at the thought process that he put behind it. You know, that does make a lot of sense, and it does usually work like that. He ended up slipping, so it's unfortunate. But I think the thought process is perfect.
Okay, so you've sold me on this now, too, after having listened to the press conference. Because in the moment, me, and by the way, I'm a fan. There's a lot about football I don't get, and I try not to sound like I pretend I do. In the moment, I had the same reaction of, okay, Javonte McCoy has essentially willed us back offensively, and for the biggest play of the game, we're choosing to take it out of his hands.
Yeah.
That was my thought process. But hey, like you just explained, why that could work. And the other part too, I mean, had Hatton not slipped, there's a good chance
we'd be having a different conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Had he not slipped. And look, hey, there's bad breaks. People slip. Like, we can talk about good breaks, bad breaks. On that onside, on the onside kick, had Hatton not been offsides, that was a freakishly good Idaho bounce.
That was one of the best onside kicks I've ever seen.
Yes. And my theory is it's not possible to do that every single time, or I'd be seeing pro kickers do that on onside kicks. So look, luck is part of the game. For Idaho, they slip. Hatton slipped. The end. It sucks. But overall, two good teams. I think it's good for the Big Sky to have Montana recover the way they have relative to the start. I mean, look, the Grizz sit at 6-1 overall, 5-1 in Division I play. I guess since you're a Grizzly, gotta ask you about Montana just for a second. Did this win recalibrate what you expect out of Montana for the rest of the season?
No, I mean, well, I'd be lying if I said no, because I didn't have a lot of expectation. I mean, I had a lot. I always have a lot of expectations, but just the way the year was going, the way our offense was playing, it was worrisome. But I feel like I'm always more so on the positive end of things. So, you know, I did still have high expectations. I did expect us to be competitive. It's a rivalry game at the end of the day, you know, so we're not just going to walk into you guys' house and let you guys run over us. But this game definitely changed my outlook on the season, just given the vast offensive improvement that I've seen, just the improvements in all aspects of the game, our ability to get to the quarterback, our ability to get pressure on the quarterback, whether it be getting a sack or not. There's just a lot of improvements that we have made this year, these last couple of games that I was not seeing early on in the season. And it did. Yes, this win did reinvigorate me and motivate me for the rest of the season.
Okay, did the Idaho loss recalibrate how you understand or how you expect Idaho is going to be the rest of the year?
Absolutely not. You guys are the same team I thought you were. Javonte McCoy, Hayden Hatton, defense. I don't know too much about your defense. I haven't done too much. I've really been really studying you guys' offense and looking at you guys' offensive weapons. And I think you guys go as far as your coach Eck and Javonte McCoy, your coach Eck allows Javonte McCoy to take you guys, Javonte McCoy and Hayden Hatton. I think that's you guys' bread and butter. I just think those guys are really good players. I can't state it enough.
Which, okay, that's okay. Just because you brought up the defense, there is one question I have that I don't know if you can answer off of watching one game. Look, Idaho defensively has been solid. I mean, since Jason Eck came, they've been solid this year too. I mean, even in a game Idaho's down 20-0, Idaho surrendered fewer than 300. They surrendered 334 yards of total offense, which, if we're just using that as a barometer, you know, compared to what good total defenses allow in the Big Sky, giving up 330-ish yards per game, would be the number four defense in the league if that's what you averaged. So, again, they're solid. But Idaho this year, they just have not been able to force turnovers. In the Big Sky, they've only forced turnovers again. They forced them, and I'm talking about interceptions and recovered fumbles.
Right.
Forced a few turnovers against Cal Poly. But full disclosure, so does everyone. But last season, Idaho led the Big Sky in turnover margin.
Wow, I didn't know that.
It's just not happening this year. From what you saw out of Idaho defensively, like, I mean, should we understand some of that's luck? Like when linebacker Trey Thomas did drop a potential pick in the first half off a tip by Kyron Beecham.
The first third down, right?
Yes, first third down.
Pick went right through concept. He was right there.
Went right through his hands.
Yeah.
But should we understand this as there is luck in forcing turnovers, as in like defensive guys have to actually make the catch or the fumble has to actually bounce your way? Or is there something that you saw from Idaho defensively that in your mind makes you think, well, of course these guys aren't forcing that many turnovers?
I will say, I believe you guys' base defense is really like a quarters defense, you know, where everybody's really sitting in like a quarter shell. So you're really sitting back and keeping everything really in front of you. That really doesn't, like, you guys don't really play an aggressive brand of defense. I don't think you guys bring a lot of pressure. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't see you guys blitz a ton. You guys play some man, but I don't think you guys bring a lot of pressure. And most times you're sitting back in cover three or cover four. You know, that doesn't really, you know, Montana's going to blitz. Montana's going to bring pressure. Montana's going to bring different looks. So that can confuse the offensive line. That can confuse the quarterback. And that causes people to make mistakes. I even mentioned this. Yes, I agree with James Jacobs. I even mentioned this on my breakdown this week of the interception that was tipped by Riley Wilson, our linebacker, that went into if you watch the play, Jackson Lee was going to pick that off anyway. He ended up getting the interception, but if you watch the playback, he's breaking on the ball as Javonte McCoy's throwing it to number one. So, you know, I think it's just the scheme that you guys run defensively. Like Mr. Jacobs is saying, you guys don't bring a lot of pressure. Your base is a quarters defense. You're really keeping everything in front of you. So it's like, it's hard to get turnovers when you're not really taking chances. Montana's going to take chances, and we're going to get hit sometimes. We're going to get beat in some man coverage. We're going to get beat deep a couple times. But I feel like the mentality is like, we're going to get them more than they get us. You get what I'm saying?
Yes. So in the comment section, Mike Colden saying we don't blitz on running QBs, but we'll blitz more on throwing QBs. That matches sense. More that makes with us, what we've seen. And anyway, what you described, it completely matches what we saw in the Montana game, because especially in the second half, it felt like Javonte McCoy was under duress the entire damn second half and made just a ton of plays. It wasn't under duress as much in the first half, but particularly in the second half, escaped it. If we had Sam Heward starting at quarterback, this game's 42-3. Without Javonte McCoy, it's not close.
Man, Javonte had my heart racing. Every time he got out of the pocket, I'm like, please just get this guy on the ground.
He might as well hit his stats for a second. He goes 26-37, 336 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. He also had the lost fumble. But full disclosure, I don't really care about those turnovers this game. Like Javonte looked like easily the best quarterback in the Big Sky. Or at least, sure, if you're talking about guys who can execute high degree of difficulty plays, I don't know who the number two quarterback is in the Big Sky who you'd even compare to Javonte McCoy.
I agree.
Okay. Well, hey, you agree. Perfect. So,
no, I said this on the radio earlier today with Coulter, and I actually said this on the Grizz Fan Pod as well. Well, I don't know if I actually definitively said it on the Grizz Fan Pod, but I said it on the radio today. I think Javonte McCoy is the best quarterback in the Big Sky.
I 100% agree. I mean, I don't really know who else you would be in the competition for number one, because they'll spend 2 seconds talking about the Big Sky as a whole before closing talk on the game. If you look at Jordan Cook at Idaho State, he has probably the best arm. He can make some of the most impressive throws, but I don't think of him as the best quarterback right now. He also absolutely gets the opportunity to make those throws, as Idaho State essentially needs a bullpen for how much they're passing.
Yeah.
Kikoa Vesperis is pretty good, but I don't think of him as, I wouldn't trade Javonte McCoy for
Who'd
him.
You said the Portland State guy?
So Kikoa Vesperis is a starter for Eastern Washington. Dante Sacheré, starter for Portland State. I mean, he's probably the best running quarterback. But Dante Sacheré is not a guy you want passing more than 20-ish times. I mean, he's kind of a different version to me of Clifton McDowell. He's not the power rusher that McDowell is. And both McDowell and Sacheré are solid passers. But I don't think there's any point where Brent Peace, when they signed Clifton McDowell, was thinking, all right, Bobby, we got to throw 45 times a game now.
Yeah. I don't think that was the situation either.
Yeah, and then I guess you could talk about Miles Hastings, but at UC Davis, but he was first team All Big Sky quarterback last year. He's looked to me solid, but when I've watched UC Davis, he also has not come across as like spectacular by any means.
Yeah, nothing wowed me about him either.
Okay, so hey, we're gonna close the book on the Idaho Montana game, but last question I have for you is now just shifting to a bigger picture question. I felt like Idaho losing, it sucks as an Idaho fan, obviously. And this game, symbolically for Idaho, was huge. A win for Idaho this game in front of a sellout crowd. It would have felt like this is over the top for a second, Samuel, forgive me. But it would have felt like a version of a coronation of Idaho football. Of like, hey, they have now ascended to being right at the top of the Big Sky for sure.
For sure.
Now, look, they lost to a good team, so not a big deal. But overall, I thought the fact of this game being a sellout, the fact of it being a sellout, not because Montana fans were filling 40% of the stadium like they were in 2018 when you guys won like 600-12. Yeah, that was a pretty good game.
I don't think it was that bad. I think it was like 40-20 or something, but
it was a blowout. The
quarterback a lot that game too.
It was a blowout that was not competitive. But I felt like this was huge for huge win for the Big Sky to get a program that's not Montana or Montana State to show that they can sell out. They do have fans that care. The dome was quieter than I wish it was because for three quarters, Montana gave Idaho nothing to cheer about. But from the Montana end, seeing Idaho as a program more or less arrive, how does that feel now to have some more company towards the top of the Big Sky of a school with fans who give a damn?
It feels awesome, to be honest, because like I remember when you guys first dropped back down and we played the rivalry in 2018 and we kind of handled you guys. I was like, dang, like it's a fun rival. It's fun to have another rivalry and another trophy game, but it's like it's not really a competitive game. You know, our only competitive rivalry to me was the Cats. But after last year when you guys beat us, I was like, oh, dang, Idaho's good now. And then this year, you know, it's a dogfight till the end. Like, it's good for the Big Sky. It's good for everybody involved. It's good for Montana. It's good for Idaho. Like, everybody wants to see great rivalry games. Everybody loves Cat Grizz. Everybody – Eastern thinks they're our rival as a rival. But, you know, rivalries are great for the conference. Rivalries are great for the league. And the fact that you guys can sell out the Kibbe Dome is – I mean – I see people on Twitter all the time talk about the Kibbe Dome, and like maybe I'm not a college football historian. I know enough about college football, but I don't get the allure of the Kibbe Dome. It's awesome. It looks amazing. The turf is awesome, but like, it's just like I think it's great for football because anytime I see people talking about the Kibbe Dome online, they're like, oh my gosh, like put the Kibbe Dome on NCAA, do this with the Kibbe Dome. It's like Kibbe Dome everywhere. So it's like I think it's really good for college football.
Okay. The other thing, and look, you said it a few times and I appreciate it. There's no reason for you to know this, but you're like, hey, historically, Idaho's biggest rival had been Boise State. But Idaho doesn't play Boise State in anything now.
Makes sense.
And it's not just in football. Boise State refuses to schedule Idaho in any sport because there's nothing that makes a Boise State Bronco harder than saying that someone's not their rival. That is not – obviously, that's not the case in Montana. Look, you brought up calling Idaho a rival, and we know it's not the same as Montana State. But Bobby Houck stormed the field after the game on his own. I think it's safe to say Montana's serious now in calling Idaho a rival.
Oh, yeah. And it's the fact that you guys came to our house last year and really handled us. Like, you guys put it on us. And, you know, Houck takes those as digs. Houck loves bulletin board material, you know, like it's good that this game means something because obviously, like you said, it's not going to be Cat Grizz, but this rivalry definitely seems like it's building up to be something close to that. And if you look at the history of the rivalry, like if you look at the history of the Cat Grizz rivalry, we are way heavy favorites. If you look at the history of the Idaho Montana rivalry, you guys are heavy, heavy favorites. I think it's like 60-30 or something like that, 70-30, something close to that. But yeah, so it might be even worse than that, but you know. Yeah, it means something to Houck, you could tell.
Yeah, my first game seeing Idaho play was it was against Montana, and I grew up in a Montana household. So I'm in like fifth grade or something like that, 95 or 96. It's the year Montana won their first national championship. Dave Dickinson's quarterback. The only two losses that Montana team had were both on the Palouse. They lose to Washington State. They lose to Idaho. I was in the stands for that game on the Montana side. That was my first Idaho game. And I'm not going to say I was sold on Idaho at the time, but one of the things I distinctly remember as a kid was the environment was kick-ass. And I hated Idaho fans at that time. And the game we saw was the first time in a long time that the Kibbe Dome that I experienced reminded me of that first time being in there sitting on the Grizz section.
Nostalgia.
Yeah, well, you know what? As long as nostalgia materializes into something that matters, there's nothing wrong with that, dude. Right. So look, we're going to shift to Big Sky Pick'em real quick. Before that, there is a final question we have for you, Sammy, which we call this the reversal, which is whenever we have a first time guest, we ask them to ask us anything with no notice whatsoever. It can be sport Idaho related, sports related, or nothing related whatsoever. I'm going to give you a second to think about that while we talk about Hughes River Expedition. And here, dudes, the thing about Hughes River Expedition is if you have ever considered going on any sort of rafting trip, you want to see some whitewaters. You want to see parts of the Northwest you're never going to see otherwise, like the Middle Fork of the Salmon, the main Salmon River of No Return, Salmon River Canyons. You want to go on a special trip like the one they had to see the Perseid meteor shower. Get a hold of Colin. Doesn't matter if you're a large group for like a corporate kind of retreat. Doesn't matter if it's just you and your family. You want to have a trip you're going to talk about for the rest of your life. Get a hold of Colin. The trips are all inclusive. Just get your ass there. They take care of everything else. Call him now at 800-262-1882 or check him out at hughesriver.com. All right, Samuel, reversal. Any questions? Okay. And Martin, you're pulling your ass in here too.
Okay. Who do you guys see, one, making the college football playoff this year at the FBS level, and who do you guys see winning it?
Martin, I'm defaulting to you first, dude.
Let me, just for my sake, I need to pull up the AP Top 25.
Fair.
I think I'm going to come out and just say I am very much I grew up in Seattle, group Seattle area, I should say. So I am going to go with Washington, Michigan, Georgia, and Florida State.
Who's winning?
I'm going to go UW. I love watching Michael Penix play.
Man, he's awesome.
Yes, we're all big fan of seeing the Penix exposed as much as we can. So, first off, Samuel, I have to out myself, especially since realignment, but also with running the show. I have been all in on all I care about are the teams I'm a stakeholder in, which is FCS. But because you made me look it up, I can now pretend that I was paying attention. Right. So I'm going to say Georgia is going to make it because I don't like the SEC, and that means there's going to be an SEC team in the final. So Georgia's going to make it, and they're going to be in the championship. I'm going to go with Michigan over Ohio State for no reason. Well, actually, no, I'm going to go with Ohio State over Michigan for no reason other that I'm used to Harbaugh shitting the bed against Ohio State. I'm going to go with UW because I want them to make the playoffs and then lose by 1,000 in the first round. And then I'm going to have to go with Florida State. So I'm going to say that final is Georgia, Florida State. And because I'd be rooting for Florida State, Georgia wins.
Dang, that's interesting. I haven't heard Florida State. I mean, they're undefeated. They're 6-0 right now, right?
Yeah.
Man, that's interesting. That mean they have to win the ACC.
Which there's a bit of a, well, the next highest ACC rated team is North Carolina at 6-0.
Yeah.
But okay, well, now because you brought it up, before we pick the Big Sky, this is obviously something kind of on your mind. Who's going to be in the Final Four of the FBS? Who wins?
Final Four of the FBS? I got OU, Oklahoma ties. UW, I really like Penix, Odunze, and Polk. I like those guys a lot. OU, UW, I'm going to say that the SEC is going to beat up on each other. Ohio State's going to win the Big Ten, and they're going to get in. And I'm going to go with North Carolina making it in from the ACC. So I'm going to say North Carolina plays Ohio State. Ohio State wins that. UW plays OU. OU wins that. OU makes it to the championship and wins.
Okay. All right, dudes. Well, hey, dude, place your bets now. You got your advance notice. So, okay, Big Sky Pick'em. Martin, I'm going to feverishly slow down. Okay, last week was a rough week for Tubbs. All of us went 3-3. I got it. And I'm going to say, God damn it, Northern Arizona and Portland State. That's where I'm struggling right now. So Martin overall sits at 42-15. Dallas, who is not here, sits at 46-11. I'm 49-8. Samuel Kem is undefeated. So game one, rotation the whole time is going to be Martin, Samuel, and me. Martin, Idaho State at Portland State.
I'm not the big FCS nerd. I just watch Idaho and have my homer pick, but I'm gonna go with Portland State.
I chose Idaho State on the Grizz fan pod, and I'm gonna choose them here too. I think they're gonna be riding high after that Eastern Washington win, and I say they carry that over this week.
Yeah, it's a weird strength on weakness matchup for both teams. Because like Idaho State has been pretty damn effective passing the ball. They had that huge, that my God, I don't know if you guys watched that at all, but Eastern Washington with 16 minutes left leads 41-14 and finds a way to lose in Pocatello 42-41. And it's absolutely, incredible six. And by the way, if Jason Eck had watched that game, you can just imagine him saying, "Hey, Aaron, just don't snap. Just don't snap the ball. You could have just gotten rid of 4 minutes." Like it's very hard to score four touchdowns in 16 minutes without help. Oh, yeah. But Portland State has been shockingly good to me on the ground. Portland State's rushing for 318 yards per game, second only to Montana State at 331. That's in Big Sky play. Portland State has 10 rushing touchdowns in Big Sky play. Yes, they have only losing to Montana State. They have only played dog shit. But because I have been burned too many times on Portland State, and because I don't think Idaho State's going to be able to stop Portland State on the ground, I want to root for Cody Hawkins and Idaho State, but I'm going to say top five Portland State, which I that pains me so much because I'm just fatigued with Portland State because of who they are. Next game, Weber State at Eastern Washington, Martin.
I am going with, who did I pick in this one? Eastern Washington. As much as I want to try and ride the Weber State, like I got so used to them being good. It's finally realizing me they're not that good anymore. I'm picking Eastern.
Coach Hill still at Weber State?
Nope.
He left for BYU.
He's the defensive coordinator at BYU. Last year's offensive coordinator, Mickey Mensel, was promoted to head coach.
Wow. That's probably why they're not good right there. But I'm going to take Weber State.
You have a lot of faith. And I have a question for you, Samuel. It's an over or under number. Is Weber State in Big Sky play averaging over or under 17 points a game?
Under. They've been getting beat down.
Yeah, they're averaging 13.5 right now, which is Ed McCaffrey at Northern Colorado level. Last week, they did switch up quarterbacks. For true freshman Richie Munoz started, but he looked like a true freshman starting quarterback at Weber State would look right now. So yeah. I'm going to go Eastern Washington because I just don't think Weber State, with their inability to pass the ball, I don't think they're going to be able to exploit Eastern's weakness running the ball because Eastern's going to be able to stack the box and not care. I'm going to say, okay, Weber, if you can beat us through the air, this will be the first time beating anyone through the air. So I'm going to go Eastern Washington. I don't think Eastern is going to I have a little more faith in Aaron Best than maybe I should based off of that catastrophe I just saw in Pocatello. But I think I expect Eastern to have a little bit of a rebound. Montana State at Sacramento State, the ESPN2 game at 7:30 p.m. Pacific time, Martin.
I'm going with Montana State.
I'm going with Sac State.
I'm going to give you a minute to walk us through that, Samuel, because that you are officially the first person to pick against Montana State on the show other than in the SDSU game.
Man, Montana State's good, but I don't really think they've played anybody besides SDSU, and they lost that game, didn't they?
Yeah, lost it by a single score.
On a controversial touchdown in the back of the end zone. I think Sac State's going to bring the heat. You know, they played Idaho very tough. I think Idaho's, you know, one of the class teams in the Big Sky. I would say Montana, Idaho, and Montana State are the three juggernauts in the Big Sky right now. Sac State's right there. I'm not discounting them. I think Sac State's going to beat Montana State, though. I think they catch them sleeping. I think they catch them, you know, they're on the road in Sacramento, under the lights, ESPN2. You know, Montana State's not afraid of the big game, but I think Sac State catches them sleeping this one.
Okay, in the comments section, which we have been notoriously neglecting, Super George 111 says Sac State. Jason Mayer says Sac State over MSU. Steve Kurtz says Sac State, home field advantage. Bart Holt said Sac State because I hate the Cats. Very good reason. We have, hey, Steve Kurtz, you are right. Asking if the game is at Sac. Yes, it is at Sac. Bart Holt, game at Sac. Ron Lowney, we win by 28 because we are resting for you. Ron's a Montana State Bobcat, so he's picking the Bobcats.
Okay.
We have Shots fired, Samuel. Captain 58 says, besides the best team in the FCS, come on, Samuel. I'm going to go Montana State. And my main reason is, hey, your point about Montana State, Samuel, was correct, especially if you look at Big Sky play. The best team that Montana State's beaten so far is honestly Portland State. And minus the South Dakota State game, which Captain's correct, minus the top team in the nation, kind of big deal. Montana State has essentially had one, two, like 5 weeks worth of bye weeks in theory.
Right.
But okay, the reason I'm going to pick Montana State is I think Sacramento State, they do a lot of things okay. I don't think defensively, in particular up front, I just don't think they're going to be strong enough to stop what Montana State does on the ground. And also both Montana State quarterbacks are back. I mean, against the rush right now, Sacramento State, they're your number six team in the Big Sky. At a per rush rate, they're also the number six team in the Big Sky at giving up 4 yards per rush. So, like, hey, solid, not spectacular. I think you have to be pretty damn good to stop Montana State on the ground. But
yes.
So, look, I'm going Montana State. And we had to sprint through that because we have the game of the week to talk about. This is what Samuel spent most of his time this week prepping to discuss. Winless Northern Colorado travels to winless against anyone who kind of matters, Cal Poly. Someone's going to leave with a Big Sky win. Martin, who is it going to be in San Luis Obispo?
Northern Colorado. And I'm just going to leave it there so you two can talk about it for hours.
I'm going to take Cal Poly, simply because of the quarterback play. I think their quarterback is a little better than Northern Colorado's quarterback. Not a little bit. I think he's significantly better than Northern Colorado's quarterback. And I think that's what will lead them to the victory. But I don't think it'll be a particularly exciting game, if I'm being honest. But, you know, it might be. Maybe it's a shootout. Maybe these teams find themselves this week. Who knows?
That is finding themselves is generous. I think that's generous. So, okay, dude, this is tough for me because, look, the last couple weeks, now one of them counts Weber State, so, and everyone looks good defensively against Weber State. But Northern Colorado has looked stronger defensively the last couple weeks. They still are lost offensively. Cal Poly is a great team to find yourself offensively against. But the Mustangs have Sam Heward back, and he can throw until his first mistake. After mistake number one, two, three, four, five, and six, they're right around the corner. But the game's in San Luis Obispo. The power rankings, which say I should pick Cal Poly.
Oh, God. Trust your heart. Don't trust the power rankings.
Well, I mean, I said that wrong. Power rankings, which I publish every Sunday, pick Northern Colorado. But my heart says Cal Poly because I don't have a good reason for it. I've seen Sam Heward look good in moments, and I think he could help Cal Poly put up some points. And Northern Colorado has been able to score against virtually no one this year. They're averaging like 16 points a game. So I'm gonna make the mistake and pick Cal Poly to win this game. So that's it. By the way, Dallas's picks, which he submitted, were Portland State, Eastern Washington, Montana State, and Northern Colorado. Okay, guys, thanks for tuning in. Help the show by hammering that subscribe button. Once we get the more subscribers we get, the more likely YouTube is eventually going to have to pay us something. Also, subscribe to @SamuelAkem for sure. Sammy, you're not yet at 500 subscribers. We need to get you there so you can get that email from YouTube about potentially joining the program to get paid. Also, hey, Tubbs the Club, patreon.com back. Join the Tubbs the Club only hashtag only Tubbs Discord at patreon.com/Tubbs the Club for road games. It's a kick-ass experience for home games. Kick-ass experience. The Discord is it's grown a ton. It is wall to wall commenting during games, even for people who are in there. So it's fun as hell. We essentially have no jackasses in there since we kicked Rakitic 69 out. So it's pretty damn fun. By the way, I'm not kidding. He's been banned. We are not willing to take his money. It's not worth it.
He's been trolling me lately.
Just ignore, dude. That's it. But Samuel, thanks for coming on. Any last words?
Man, I appreciate you guys for having me, man. I appreciate that, you know, even though I wouldn't call us bitter rivals. I call Montana State our bitter rivals. But even though we're rivals, I appreciate that we're able to have these conversations and sit down and discuss the game. And I appreciate your lighthearted mentality about all this. It's freaking awesome. And, you know, I appreciate you guys having me on and giving me a ability to come on your platform, man. Thank you so much.
Hell yeah, dude. It's been a blast. Martin, you're going to play us out when at some point, probably to cut me off. Until next week, go Vandals.
Go Vandals.